Hi everyone, it's Aliza Licht here, your host, and I'm so thrilled to share that my new book, On Brand, Shape Your Narrative, Share Your Vision, Shift Their Perception, is out now. I hope you'll pick up a copy because personal branding is for everyone. It's for the new graduate starting out, the middle manager looking to level up, the executive who wants to be a thought leader, the entrepreneur starting from scratch. It's for anyone who wants to pivot or transition into something new. Because having a strong personal brand means that your name gets dropped in rooms you're not in, and that you're thought of for opportunities that other people haven't even heard of yet. So pick up a copy, and I can't wait to hear what you think. Hi, this is Aliza Licht, and this is Leave Your Mark, the podcast, where I brew fresh career advice with some of my most inspiring and successful friends. It's professional advice that you can action immediately, whether you're just starting out in your career or well on your way. With a massive to-do list and a large cup of coffee, I promise that you can get it all done and still have time to post about it. Aya Kanai, welcome to Leave Your Mark. I'm thrilled to see you.
Me. It's so wonderful to be here. I'm a longtime listener of this podcast and super honored to be a part of it.
Well, you have had an incredible career, and your journey is really something that I think everyone will be so inspired to learn about, because you've had a lot of different roles and worn many different hats. And today, of course, you're the head of editorial and creative for Google Shopping, where you oversee the development and execution of merchandising and consumer content. But previously, you were head of content and creator partnerships at Pinterest. You were editor-in-chief of Marie Claire magazine. You are passionate, clearly, about visual storytelling. And for everyone listening, Aya has 20 years of experience as a fashion director at publications, including Cosmo, Nylon, Women's Health, and Teen Vogue. You are a judge on Project Runway Junior on Lifetime. You're a board member for Apex for Youth, an organization that provides programs for Asian immigrant youth. And of course, you're a native New Yorker. You live in Brooklyn with your husband and your daughter. So I'm excited to dig into your career because it is very colorful.
I'm ready.
Okay. First, give us a little lowdown on your life growing up, because you definitely, while loving fashion, didn't necessarily think this would be a journey that you would go on.
No, as you mentioned, I am born and raised in New York. My parents are from Japan. My mother is from Kobe. My father is from Tokyo. And they actually met here in New York City and then had two American kids. So I definitely know that it was a huge privilege to grow up in New York City and be surrounded by a lot of culture, like from the jump. My parents are also creative people. So although perhaps like the stereotype of Asian parents is that I would have an expectation upon me to be a doctor or a lawyer or something of that nature, my parents were never really like that. They definitely wanted myself and my brother to explore and figure out what we wanted to do. And of course, being in New York City is that huge springboard that allows you to see so much as a young person.
What was it like having creative parents? I think my parents were, well, my dad was creative, but my mom was definitely not creative. I mean, my parents, just to be clear, Jewish parents, were like doctor, lawyer, teacher. Those were the categories that you could choose from. So creativity or a job in a creative industry was not a thing.
I think it really opened me up to possibilities. And then seeing people who were able to create a career out of something that they loved to do, I know now as a grown adult that that is so rare. That is really rare. But for me, it was normal, right? Because I had parents who were doing what they wanted to do in their chosen field. And so as I started thinking about what I wanted to do, again, it was normal to try and find something to be able to hopefully make money, support my family, and also be fulfilled at work. So I can't even tell you how lucky that is. Certainly, as I've grown up and met so many different people who were raised in different ways.
No, it is really lucky. I think also just to have like the zero judgment of whatever you're interested in to go for it. And you ended up studying art and East Asian studies at Oberlin in Ohio. And this I find incredible. You trained to be a puppeteer. Let's discuss.
Well, I was an art student, and Oberlin is a liberal arts college where you're definitely encouraged to like fly whatever flag you want when you're creating your curriculum, studying what you want to study. And at that time, I knew that this idea of creating a world, right? Like telling a story, understanding how cultures affect the type of art that gets created was something that really like sparked my interest. And I didn't know how that would come to life for me. And then somehow I just decided, like, I was reading about puppet theater and how it's an art form that exists in every culture, right? People are always trying to tell stories about their experience and create the characters and the world that they live in. So that's why I studied that. I know it sounds bizarre, and definitely now as my career has evolved, sometimes I look back and I'm like, what was I thinking? But I know how lucky I was to be given that latitude to figure it out and try things.
But you know what? I actually think there's a real through line from that to the stories you've told your entire adult career, right? I mean, at the end of the day, that is what connects the dots across everything. It's that visual storytelling.
For sure. And as my career changed, that same desire still was and still is the guiding principle. Like certainly when you're creating a fashion story, whether it's video or still images for a magazine, you are casting models. You're thinking about hair and makeup. You're considering what is the scene that they are in? Are they in location? Are they on a studio? All of that stuff is frankly the same.
But in your last year of college, you didn't really want to get a job, right? You were kind of like trying to find what else you could do other than get a job, which I actually think is really funny because probably that's the case for so many. It's like you just want to stay on this creative path. What did you end up doing?
So when I was a junior in college, I started thinking about like what I was going to do. And I knew that I had really no idea. And so what I wanted to do was like buy myself some time. So I started diving into research about what type of fellowships exist out there. So I knew that after graduating from college, I needed to find a way to fund this research that I wanted to do. So I applied for something which is called the Thomas J. Watson Fellowship, went through the entire application process, which involves tons of written applications, multiple interviews with board members of the foundation. At the time, they awarded around 20 or 30 seniors in college with a fellowship, which a fellowship is money, right? So it's money to study a project of your own design. And if any of the listeners out there are college students, this is something that you can look into. There's a variety of different fellowships where you can study any subject under the sun. I was studying experimental puppet theater, and I went to Poland, the Czech Republic, France, Japan, and the UK. And the only rule that you must follow is that you cannot have your feet on American soil during the course of that year.
That's unreal. That's unreal. It sounds like a TV show, actually.
It would make a great reality show. It really would. I definitely credit it with a lot of my ability to be courageous, to be independent, to be resourceful in challenging circumstances. And keep in mind, for all the young people listening to this, I didn't have a cell phone. I did not have a laptop. There were none of those things. So I had to really be by myself. I had to find the places I wanted to study. So I was like reaching out to people in Poland saying like, hi, I want to study at your theater. Would you allow me to come work with you? All of that was finding a path.
What's the secret to traveling alone?
For me, it was like finding the way to become my own best friend. As I said, this is the pre-cell phone world. So I had to entertain myself, right? When I got into a travel situation, and that happened all the time, you know, I was in a train station in Amsterdam. I turned away from my bag for 1 second. My entire handbag with my passport and everything was stolen. Like,
oh my God,
figure it out, you know? And I was 18 years old, terrified, and I had to find a way to recover those things in the next 24 hours. So I, now it's really sounding like a reality show, Aliza, now that you have put it in that light. So finding the ability to be my own best friend, finding the way to like trust that I can figure out tricky situations. And then practically is packing light. Again, you know that I'm someone who loves fashion, but in that year I was like, you know what? I am going to be, I think people now call it a capsule wardrobe, but really for me, it was just like a bunch of dirty things in a bag. Like I had to really make sure that I was very self-contained.
Well, I'm very proud to say that I went on my first European trip with a carry-on only last month. And that was a very huge accomplishment for me because normally I have a massive suitcase. So I feel like maybe I could do a pretty solid job if I did this again. So while you were doing all of this creative puppeteering and really diving into these cultures, you did have some experience in fashion via internships, right?
Yes.
So while you were doing all of this, you know, travel, puppeteering, visual storytelling, and really immersing in these cultures, you did have some experience interning in fashion, right?
Yes. I had done fashion internships during college, and that was something that I was always interested in.
So how did you ultimately decide to like get a job in that industry?
So when I came back from the Watson Fellowship, again, I was faced with the fact that anything you put off actually does come back around. So I was I know you may try to hide, but you can't hide from having to get a job. So I knew that I needed to work. So I was participating in performances of experimental puppet theater shows in various different like cool downtown theaters in the Lower East Side and Brooklyn. At the same time, I was working at Angelica Kitchen, which is a health food restaurant that unfortunately no longer exists. And one of the things that I wanted to do was try to get a job at a fashion magazine. So I realized that becoming a professional puppeteer was maybe not my path in life. So when I applied to be the first fashion assistant at Teen Vogue, which at that time was a brand new magazine, and Aliza, I think that we were around at this same time, there was no blueprint for that type of thing. And it was, of course, a spinoff of Vogue. So it had like the Vogue name attached to it. But I genuinely remember when it was my job to fax and call PR people to try and request clothes for fashion stories that we were doing at Teen Vogue, I would have people like hang up on me because I would say like, hi, I'm calling from Teen Vogue. And PR people would be like, well, that's not really a thing. And just say goodbye. Of course, Teen Vogue became a great thriving publication as it continues to be now. And really for me, it was my big break because it's where I learned what a stylist is. And being exposed to the incredible stylists who at that time were Vogue stylists who in their quote unquote free time were lending their talents to Teen Vogue to style various different covers and fashion stories. That was how I learned what a stylist is, the way to be creative on set, the way to sort of concept a story. That's where I learned what that was. And I knew instantly that that's what I wanted to do.
How did you get the experience to sort of move in that direction? Because you ultimately rose to the tippy top of what you can do in this space, including beyond that, editor-in-chief. So what do you think you had as sort of your, you know, God-given talents, your intuitive nature, your work ethic? Because I do think that your work ethic in particular had a lot to do with where you've ended up.
Well, number one, there's a huge amount of luck. And I don't want anyone who is listening to this to discount that because I can see now in, you know, hindsight is 2020, that being on that original staff of Teen Vogue, and I think there were 12 people that worked there at the time, it was very lean by Condé Nast standards. It meant that I was talking to the editor-in-chief every day. I was involved in every meeting because I was the assistant to everybody, right? Like it meant that I was like in the trenches, involved in everything. And so that when you work on a much bigger staff, you are a little bit less involved in the everydayness of people's creative decisions, larger decision making about what covers are going to be. And because I was young, they were like, well, we want to know what the young people think. So I would be brought into conversations that in other places, nobody would have even noticed who I was. So there was a huge amount of luck there. And then I was also really interested in it. So I would spend my weekends assisting the Vogue stylists on their photo shoots. So naturally, those Vogue stylists had their own assistants who worked on their projects for Vogue, but they would be prepping those jobs. So they wouldn't have time to assist on the Vogue photo shoot. So I would be the person who would come in as like a pinch hitter to help. That put me in places and on sets with celebrities and models and huge photographers that I would never have had otherwise. So that was how I learned what it takes.
So great. I mean, those were such good days. One of the things that I think is so interesting about the world we live in today, especially, you know, this whole trend right now of quiet quitting, right? And sort of just doing your job, avoiding burnout. Like, that was the opposite of how we worked back then. When you think back to your sort of working hours when you were coming up the ranks and you think about people today, what would you say is the biggest shift in mindset? Because something has totally changed. And I think, you know, we could say, oh, it's a pandemic, but I think it's more than that.
So spoiler alert, now I work at Google, but I would say that at Google, the young people that I work with, I am like gagging by how impressive they are. As Gen Zers often say, like they like understand the assignment. They give extremely nuanced feedback. They will push back when it's merited and speak up in ways that I never did when I was their age, in ways that I think are really positive. Like for me, when I was 25, I thought my job was to be silent, pack and unpack trunks, make sure everything was perfect, and to only speak when spoken to. Whereas I have found, certainly working at Google, that the young people that I partner with on a lot of these projects, frankly, give incredibly thoughtful feedback and will surface ideas that need to be heard. So I, in some ways, wish I would have known that I could do that back then.
Well, you know, it was a very, first of all, very different job, number one. Also, let's be fair, like when you're on set, and for people listening, like there's a lot of people on set, you're not the most important person in that sea of people, right? There's usually talent, you know, so there's a hierarchy in a way as to like when and how you can sort of lend your voice.
That is absolutely true. And I know you're right. Like we're definitely comparing the two industries is certainly apples and oranges. I guess I would say that for me, watching young people who can sort of whip up a deck in like 20 minutes and produce really thoughtful, creative ideas, I like to see all of that. I like that, those varieties of point of view.
Oh, no, for sure. I mean, that's what makes it the most creative when you have multiple points of view. So you've obviously had incredible experience in a lot of different creative places, mostly magazines, for the bulk of your career. What is your POV? Are magazines dead? Print magazines?
Wow, that's an interesting question. I mean, no, I don't think magazines are dead. And certainly having been in a couple different consumer tech platforms since then, I would say building a brand that consumers trust is very hard. So coming from these legacy publishers that have been around, so Marie Claire, for example, was founded in 1937. The brand is very well established. It's an international brand that consumers care about. Certainly the other brands I worked for all have a different point of view, whether it's Nylon, Teen Vogue, Cosmo, Women's Health, etc. They have a really strong brand point of view and content that backs that up. So as long as, and what I've been happy to see these publishers doing is like evolving past the print model, evolving past subscriptions, developing brand extensions, all of that. And we work with publishers. Certainly we work with them at Pinterest. We work with them all the time at Google. And we know that they have a really important place. So not dead at all.
What's the craziest request you ever received from one of your bosses back in the day?
Okay. So when I was a stylist assistant, I worked with a very famous stylist. And she is not from this country, and she was super intense. And at that time, my job was to pull accessories for the fashion story and to provide her with all the tools and the accessories she needed for her shoot. And if any of you all are fashion people out there, this is what's called like a market editor. So my job was to pull the market for accessories. And that's what she wanted more than anything. And I had trays and trays, tables and tables, shoes, bags, jewelry, everything. But she didn't care about any of that. She wanted this specific brand of hosiery. I think it's from the UK, and the brand name is called Fun, F-U-N-N. She wanted this hosiery called Fun, and she was screaming at me. The hosiery was stuck in customs. As happens, of course, the single most important thing you need will be stuck in customs, of course. And yes, she was screaming at me, and she was like, where is the fun? She's like, what's the fun?
Oh, my God.
She said, if the fun isn't on set, I am going to be livid. And just like, just nonstop, where is the fun? Every day I would come in, did the fun arrive? Like, where is it? And when I told this story later to my friends who were not fashion people, they were rolling on the ground laughing. Like, they could not handle it. But of course, for me, because to me, fun was a brand name. But to them, they just like could not handle that this person was, you know, screaming at me about bringing the fun.
The irony of the brand name and how not fun. And by the way, I love how she said she's going to be livid. It sounds like she's already there. I just want to point out, though, that it's sort of an underrated skill that every single fashion person, I think, has and develops, is the ability to deal with shipping and customs and be
Who do you need to be friends with at the UPS? Who do you need to be friends with at DHL? Like, we had all those relationships. And in this particular case, I'm so sorry, but like, I just didn't have the fun, and I was trying so hard to get the fun out of customs. But anyway, so I mean, there's a million stories like that, but that one particularly, sometimes it makes me laugh even now. And I think about it when I'm in like a particularly hairy work situation where I'm like, did the fun ever show up? Like, and I'm like, I'm pretty sure it did come, but like now I can't remember. I can only remember how livid, quote unquote livid, she was that the fun did not arrive.
Oh my God, that is so funny. By the way, I was such a good WorldNet customer that I'm still on their swag mailing list. Like, I still feel warm, fuzzy feelings toward WorldNet.
Yeah. Love them.
Love them. Richard, shout out to Richard and Mary. Okay. What drew you? What was that sort of epiphany moment that you were like, I need to take all of these years of experience and apply it to tech?
I had been partnering with all the various different platforms as an editor, and there was a genuine curiosity, right? I wanted to understand, what are these people doing all day? How do these platforms work? How can I get more sort of in the weeds of what's going on there? And also, I just was not afraid, right? I think that I probably should have been, because making any big, massive change in the type of industry that you work in is a huge adjustment. But at the time, I didn't know any better. And I was like, I'm just going to try new stuff. So that's why it was genuine, just curiosity, a desire to understand how these platforms that impact all of our lives every single day, how could I get involved in how the storytelling is done there?
Can you explain, or at least maybe try to teach people, how you completely just ignore fear? Because I think that that is a huge factor in stopping people from thinking like, you know what, I can do that. Why can't I do that?
I think that perhaps I should cultivate like a little bit more weariness of new situations, but I had a really strong desire to evolve, right? Like I had been an editor for more than 20 years. I knew that I wanted to see how these things that I had learned would apply elsewhere. And I just really wanted to try that. I don't think that I had a sense of what the learning curve would be. And perhaps that would have given me some more fear, but I really had a horse blinder on to what I wanted to do. And I didn't have a sense of what would be the, I don't even know, like landmines that would exist to get there.
And how did you pitch yourself or convince tech companies that you had what it takes to sort of make that transition?
Well, I mean, again, I think that there was a strong amount of luck, which was that there was a job, I applied for it. And there was a desire to have outsider thinking. In fact, that is what was said to me a lot during my application process for the various different roles I've had since being an editor, is like, they want outsider thinking. Because I think that a lot of the way that, frankly, marketing has evolved into this content space is that there is a need to bring in different types of people to make that happen. So I was lucky that the roles and the opportunities and the desire from the platform to have someone new and different come in, even when it's uncomfortable, right? Like even when I might be saying something that goes against the grain of how it's been done in the past, I think that I felt comfortable knowing that that was invited.
What do you think your superpower is?
At work, I would say taking a brief and thinking about how to bring it to life visually through creative. I think that, you know, there's incredible people who I work with who are builders of frameworks, strategy people, operations people. I literally cannot do that work. I can't. Do not ask me to pivot the spreadsheet. I have like mild dyslexia. I can't look at numbers that are in columns and rows. Like sometimes when I'm looking at a spreadsheet, I'll take like a piece of paper and I'll put it up against the screen just to make sure that I'm really seeing things correctly. So I am more of like, what is the nugget of the idea we're trying to convey? And give me a minute to think about how to bring that to life in a way that's compelling visually.
Tell us a little bit about what your job today actually entails.
So I started at Google in March of this year. So I oversee editorial and creative for shopping at Google. Our goal is to help consumers understand that there are all of these rich tools on Google to help them find things that they might want to buy on Google. That sort of inspiration, that research process, that discovery of things that you're looking for, Google is uniquely equipped to do. And so bringing together and making sure that we are surfacing exciting products in our ad campaigns. So that might be like giant out-of-home billboards that you'll see in various different, we hope, like parts of your neighborhood coming this fall, or also thinking about strategies for various different social platforms. Like how does the content we make to go on Instagram differ from the content that we'll make for TikTok? So that I would say is what the job is. And I work within the marketing organization. So I partner with some of the sharpest, smartest marketers I have ever met. And it's actually like a lot of fun.
I mean, I'm not surprised, but it's interesting when I hear sort of the nuggets of the job, because it really is everything you've done before, just sort of like putting it in a new environment.
Absolutely. And I think that when you think about things like imposter syndrome, I definitely question like, what am I doing? Is this right? Am I even the person to do this? And so when I have those thoughts, you know, when those fear thoughts creep in, which of course they do, 100% they do, I try to really ground myself in like, well, how would I tell this story if it was just full on editorial, if I was back in my world, whether at Teen Vogue, Nylon, Cosmo, any of those places, how would I tell this story for any of the other places where I was churning out stories every day, week, month. You know, when you work in an editorial calendar, you are producing content every single day. So how can I take that ability to think on my feet and transfer that to another space?
You raise a great point, because it is a really important tactic when you're sort of facing a challenge to be able to remember when you've done it successfully before and how you've done it. So I think that that is a great example for people to hear, because you do sometimes, especially in a new job, you can start to doubt your skills and like, wait, can I actually do this thing? But the reality is, if you sort of lean on your previous experience, then you really can, and it can guide you.
That's so true.
Switching gears to working mom world, I do have to say that when I see your Instagram, I'm like, oh my God, Aya is the most fun mom ever. I don't know. I just feel like you are just having so much fun being a mom. You go to the park all the time. Like, I hate the park. How do you channel that sort of positivity and mom life all the time? I feel like it's all the time. You seem like a genuinely happy person to be doing those types of things. Like, I never want to go to the park again, ever.
I will say I definitely have my ups and downs like any person. I would say that my journey to becoming a mom was really long and experienced a lot of challenges with infertility and IVF, multiple rounds of IVF and all of that. And so because of that, I am particularly grateful that I got to become a parent. It was not easy. It was not inexpensive. You know, I had to do a lot of work to get there. So I do feel a lot of gratitude for the fact that I have this, you know, one opportunity to be a parent. When I think about parenting, and perhaps I hope that I am this way in life as well, is that really listening to what is the feedback that your kid is giving you has helped me to be a better parent, because even when they are pre-verbal, they're telling you so much. So really listening, I think, has been helpful. And then also, who was it that said the most important career decision you'll make is who you get married to or who your partner is? Definitely the most important decision you make in parenting is who your partner is as well. And I have an amazing partner who does way more than his share in the parenting arena. Frankly, honestly, Aliza, at times I'm like, I could disappear and she wouldn't mind. Like, she is so obsessed with her dad. So it's wonderful to see her have like really positive relationships with both of her parents.
Aw. And how old is she now?
She's 4.
She's 4. Okay. So you're a good listener. Kudos. Is she a good listener?
I don't know if she's a good listener, but she is always listening. Like, you know, I'm sure you know this with your own kids, is that they will parrot back things that you have said that you didn't realize they were listening when you said it. Totally. And she's definitely listening to how my husband and I relate to each other. So I think that that is definitely something I'm always, I hope, keeping in the back of my mind to model a relationship that is something that she can believe in.
She's basically Google Home.
Oh my God. Everyone's kid is pretty much that.
That's so funny. You know, you've been super successful. You've had incredible experience. When you look back on your entire career, what do you think has been your guiding force?
Oh, I think that finding a way to bring a sort of like nuance to the storytelling. Like, when you're an editor, the content is the point, right? When you're a marketer, the content is a vehicle to bring a message to consumers. And so I think that what I'm always trying to do in my work is to be a good listener, understand different people's point of view, and then hopefully like digest that and make it something that's interesting that consumers will be inspired by.
And I think you do it incredibly well. One of the reasons I host this podcast is to, well, one, see friends who I don't get to see that often, like you, but also to really abolish gatekeeping. And I think that gatekeeping is still an incredibly challenging thing that everyone deals with today. when you think about your career, was there ever a moment where you felt like things were being kept from you, that if you just knew a certain trick, things would be easier?
I mean, like, I didn't grow up in the age of social media, and I don't know how things would be different if I had. But when I was a young person, middle school, high school, you know, that was like the early days of like dial-up internet. So I think that I got an instant messenger account when I was in high school, and I didn't really get what it was for. And when I started at fashion magazines, you know, which were in some ways like a way to synthesize fashion trends for consumers, at that time, that was really the only way for people to know what are the fashion trends. Now, of course, there's a million different places where you can learn about trends, whether it's fashion, beauty, lifestyle, anything that you're interested in. And I think that one of the really amazing parts about working at Google is that people come to Google to find helpful information. So one of the amazing things, the many amazing things about working at Google, is that I'm able to work with our trends team to really understand, like, okay, what are people searching for on our platform? And how can I make exciting content for consumers about those trends, right? So for example, like over the summer, we saw a 600% increase in searches of pearl necklaces for men, right? Like Harry Styles was on tour. You know, gender norms are literally getting exploded apart. And this trend of like different types of jewelry that might have historically been only for women or certain categories of people, people are like really interested in exploring that type of jewelry. And that would be across anything. Like we've seen trends in tons of exciting other lifestyle categories, like hydroponic gardens, right? So, you know, people were figuring out how to grow their own food when they don't live with access to their own farm. Like they can have a hydroponic garden, their fire escape or their back porch. And so all of that is the type of content that is really compelling to me, because I can see how that's reflected back into culture. And from a let's not gatekeep point of view, like my goal is to synthesize those trends and serve it back to consumers so that consumers can see stuff that they might want to shop for if they're interested in it. So that, I hope, is the way in which I'm able to reduce the amount of gatekeeping and help consumers find something that's exciting and new.
That was a great answer. So you've been able to innovate in your career. You have come from a very traditional world, and you've been able to innovate and apply those skills to a new career in tech. What would you say to people today who are stuck in their careers and feel like it's been too long and they don't have additional experience, and maybe they feel like they can't get out of what they're doing because it's almost like they're cemented in that role? What would you say to them?
I think that there has been all these conversations surrounding finding a mentor. And I have been incredibly lucky to have amazing mentors throughout the course of my career, women specifically who I really look up to in terms of the type of life, career, and families that they have built. But I would say, as I have grown up, I wish that people could understand that your friends and your professional relationships at like peer-to-peer level are also some of your most important mentors, because they're going through the exact same thing as you. And I would say that a lot of those peer-to-peer relationships have helped me the most through incredibly hard times that I have struggled with, professional failures. No one posts their career failures on LinkedIn or, you know, the various places where you have your resume, right? So the career failures, health crises, personal failures, which affect everything in your life, not just your work. It has been my peer mentors who have made the biggest difference, who have introduced me to people, who have led me to new opportunities. And so I would say to those people, yes, go about the business of finding a mentor who is above you, right? Who is serving as a guiding light to what you'd like to evolve into, but do not discredit the value of peer-to-peer mentors.
That is great advice, and actually advice that no one has ever dropped on this podcast before. So thank you.
All right.
Yes, I am bringing it. All right. Last question, always the same. How do you ultimately want to leave your mark?
I would like to help people understand that it's okay to be a beginner and that at various points in your career, you are going to be a beginner again and again. For better or for worse, it does not stop. So get comfortable with being a beginner, get comfortable with being curious, get comfortable with asking probing questions. You know, when I was interviewing for my job at Google, I was, of course, interviewing with many people, and my now boss said to me, I know what I don't know. I know what I don't know, and we need this type of expertise on our team. And so that helped me to understand that she, and her name is Stephanie Horton, she's incredible. Like, she also was willing to acknowledge that there are things she doesn't know. She's a big deal director at Google. And she was also saying, like, hey, there's stuff that I don't know. I want to fill in those gaps. I want people who know about these types of things. And so it's something that has been a guiding principle for me in my life as well, of you're going to be a beginner again and again. When you're a parent, you're going to be a beginner. Multiple times I have changed my career and felt like I was in a literal free fall. Like, I'm never going to figure this out. And so I hope, if I'm thinking about what is my mark, is that a willingness to start again.
I love that. And it's so true. It is so true. And I think there is a stigma to it, right? Especially when you're in a new job, you might think like, oh, I need to show that I know everything. It's like, you don't. I think that's really, really wonderful advice. I'm so happy for you. I love everything that you've done. I love how you've been able to just take your learnings and really innovate with them. And I'm just psyched to see you continue doing what you're doing and see you in the playground with your daughter.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me. And I hope that this was valuable for your listeners. And it's totally an honor for me.
Oh my God. Of course it will be.
Thanks so much for listening to Leave Your Mark, the podcast. If you want more career advice, be sure to pick up a copy of my best-selling book, Leave Your Mark. If you're on Instagram, make sure to follow at Leave Your Mark Podcast to stay up with the latest episodes. And of course, say hi to me at Aliza Licht XO. If you're on Twitter, definitely reach out at Aliza Licht. I would love to hear from you. If you want to subscribe to my newsletter or attend a future virtual mentoring event, go to alizalicht.com for more information. And just remember this, if change doesn't hurt a little, it's not change. Keep on rocking.